Headlines: people take to the streets in the Iranian capital to denounce the recent riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran and Washington are exchanging messages on reviving the 2015 deal through the EU coordinator and some countries' foreign ministers. Also ahead, an exit poll shows a right-wing alliance led by Giorgia Meloni's Brothers of Italy party looks set to win a majority in the next parliament. Thank you for joining us. And our top story: Iranians have filled the streets across the country to denounce the latest riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Crowds of protesters rallied to denounce the desecration of sanctities as well as acts of vandalism during the riots. Demonstrators in Tehran issued a statement at the end of their rally. They called on the authorities to decisively deal with those breaking laws and spreading lies. The rioters blocked the streets, vandalized public property and police vehicles, as well as setting fire to dozens of ambulances. And that followed the death of 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini after she was taken to a police station. The Tehran police commander, Hossein Rahimi, has rejected claims that Amini was physically assaulted. Officials say she died of medical conditions.
It's the third time since Friday that Iranians assemble en masse to call the nation for peace. This gathering is in fact a response to days of nationwide street violence and riots that erupted in Iran following the death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman who died on September 16th, days after she was taken into a police station. The demonstrators here say while they sympathize with Mahsa's death, they don't want the violent protests to go on.
We are too waiting for the investigation to shed light on Mahsa's death. We are all saddened by her death. But unfortunately, some people are committing vandalism in the name of Mahsa. They're desecrating our sanctities in her name.
It's not about Ms. Amini. Those people who have violated law and order have used Mahsa's death as an excuse to incite unrest in our country. They have destroyed public properties and burned our flag, which represents our identity.
Police have rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was mistreated, saying no physical contact happened between officers and Amini. Now, violent protests and acts of vandalism come while Iranian authorities have given assurances that a thorough investigation is underway into her death. Here, people describe the rioters as foreign-backed elements who are exploiting the death of Mahsa Amini to instigate chaos and wreak havoc across the country.
I believe Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the U.S. are trying to use the issue of Mahsa Amini through their media propaganda to sow divisions among Iranians and deal a blow to the Islamic Republic. But they will never achieve their goals because our nation will stay united.
22-year-old Mahsa was an Iranian Kurd from the city of Saqqez in Kurdistan province. On September 13th, she was on a trip to Tehran with her family when she was taken by police. Police have released the CCTV footage showing Mahsa suddenly collapsing on the ground and then later being brought to an ambulance.
People here say they're all grieved for Mahsa's unfortunate fate. And they say the issue should not divide Iranians and harm national security. Yusuf Jalali, Rostiga, Tehran.
Iran has also summoned the British and Norwegian ambassadors in connection with the recent riots. The foreign ministry says it called in the British ambassador to protest the hostile propaganda of London-based Persian language media against the Islamic Republic. The ministry lodged Tehran's strong protest with the UK government, saying the media Britain is hosting have been provoking riots in Iran over the past days. The ambassador was told that such measures represent an interference in Iran's domestic affairs, as well as acts against its national sovereignty. The Norwegian ambassador was also summoned over what the foreign ministry said were meddlesome, false, and partial comments by the country's parliament speaker. Academic and political analyst Hakima Saghayi Berya tells us how the anti-Iran propaganda machine has weaponized the hijab and is trying to incite hatred and violence in the country.
The issue has been weaponized, which means that it has been, you see all sorts of Islamophobia going on, trying to incite hatred among the people, trying to incite violence, all kinds of black propaganda going on. You see that, for example, with this, this latest incident that happened, before anything was finalized about what happened, with this lady that lost her life, the foreign propaganda machine started talking about all sorts of unfounded assertions that were meant to create hatred, to create discord, to create violence, incite violence among people.
Now, Iran's foreign minister says Tehran and Washington are exchanging messages on restoring the 2015 deal through the EU coordinator and some foreign ministers of certain countries. Hossein Amir Abdullahian was speaking with his Syrian counterpart on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York. He said the Islamic Republic has adopted a rational approach and is pursuing the path of diplomacy in the talks to revive the accord. Amir Abdullahian said Iran wants a sustainable agreement that guarantees economic benefits for the country. Tehran has already said that the deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, can be revived if the U.S. shows goodwill and acts realistically. The JCPOA hit a snag when Washington unilaterally pulled out of it in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran. In other news, Israeli troops are on high alert ahead of the Jewish holidays. The regime's authorities have imposed a full closure on the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip crossings ahead of celebrations marking the new Jewish year. Mona Kandil has more from Ramallah.
The Israeli military has announced a series of closures on the Palestinian territories that will be imposed during a number of Jewish holidays. The first lockdown is imposed for the new Jewish year called Rosh Hashanah and will last till Tuesday midnight. During the closure, all checkpoints between the occupied West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and Israel will remain closed. This means Palestinians who have Israeli-issued permits are not allowed to enter Al-Quds and lands occupied in 1948. The Israeli army routinely seals off the West Bank on Jewish holidays, but the closure for the Palestinians is yet another form of the collective punishment that Palestinians have to bitterly endure because of the Israeli occupation.
Closure of the Palestinian territories, including the West Bank cities and refugee camps, comes as part of the collective punishment imposed by the Israeli regime under the pretext of celebrating the new Jewish year. It also imposes more rules on the Palestinians. This measure is part of a widespread war that's meant to strengthen the occupation.
This year, the closure comes at a sensitive time due to rising armed confrontations between Israeli forces and Palestinians in the West Bank. Early on Sunday, another Palestinian was killed during Israeli military raid on Nablus. The Israeli military claimed its troops identified a group of armed Palestinians driving near Nablus. Regime troops opened fire at them, killing Saad Al-Kouni, and took his body. Three more Palestinians were wounded during the operation.
The Israeli troops claim the operation came under the routine raids, but what's happening is a barbaric act. They are murdering more Palestinians in cold blood. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone. It's clear there is a green light from the Israeli regime and its army to kill more youths under the pretext of confronting resistance fighters.
Meanwhile, scores of Jewish settlers escorted by police broke into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds and performed rituals in its compound. The Israeli military has already increased its military presence across the occupied Palestinian territories even before the start of Jewish holidays. This comes amid the regime's atrocities and military operations to prevent Palestinians' resistance. Mona Khandir, occupied Ramallah.
The UK Prime Minister is considering a very controversial move to relocate Britain's embassy from Tel Aviv to occupied Al-Quds. The announcement has already angered Palestinians who have long held Al-Quds as the capital of their future state. But Liz Truss, of course, has made no bones about her pro-Israel stance. But why she's putting this potential move at the top of her list is questionable, given that the UK is grappling with so many economic problems at this point in time.
Indications are coming from the UK Prime Minister Liz Truss, who is considering to break with decades-old tradition and move the UK embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. This move has been strongly criticized by not only Palestinians, but the UN. A number of special rapporteurs have said relocating the British embassy to Al-Quds would break with international law and UN resolutions and reverse decades of British policy.
The capital of Israel. Thank you.
The potential move of the embassy to Al-Quds follows the footsteps of the former U.S. President Donald Trump.
President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
It also led to Palestinians' fierce condemnation, leading to protests and clashes in which Israeli forces killed dozens of Palestinians. Even the former UK Prime Minister Theresa May criticized the move at the time. Special Rapporteur focused on Palestine has said, two or more wrongs do not make a right. Acts altering character, status, the demography of Al-Quds have no legal effects and are null and void and must be rescinded. But why would the UK Prime Minister consider such a move when the UK is grappling with a series of crises which are more important for a new Prime Minister, like a cost of living crisis that has gripped the UK, getting worse by the day? Liz Truss has not hidden the fact of her pro-Israeli stance. She has said that under my leadership, Israel will have no stauncher friend in the world. That's what I've done as Foreign Secretary and Trade Secretary. I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. She also said that she would further solidify her ties with Israel by signing a free trade deal with Israel. This is interesting since she has rejected that notion with the U.S. at this point in time. Liz Truss has admitted that the U.K. will not strike a post-Brexit free trade deal with the U.S. for a number of years.
The five other countries to have followed Washington are Honduras, Australia, the Czech Republic, Serbia, and Slovakia. Yet this move does nothing to solve the Palestinian issue. And one reason for the embassy relocations has been the so-called normalization of ties between some Arab countries and Israel, another precedent set by Trump. Germans, feeling the squeeze over surging energy prices, have staged a protest rally to demand the completion of Nord Stream 2 project that was designed to transport fuel from Russia.
When someone turns off a gas tap, turns off the heating, these are not normal conditions and they cannot be. Germany is one of the richest countries in the world, and then something like that is not just possible. Russia has a problem. Russia is affected by sanctions that are very, very restrictive. And yes, the Russians are simply saying, lift the sanctions, then we can supply everything.
The protesters, with some carrying Russian flags, hit the streets of the eastern coastal town of Lubmin. They called for lifting sanctions on Russia to make sure that people get gas at reasonable prices again. The protest took place on the second day of a two-day trip to the Persian Gulf region by Chancellor Olaf Scholz to intensify energy cooperation with the UAE and Qatar in order to end reliance of Russian gas. Now, the Nord Stream 2 was designed to double the flow of Russian gas to Germany through the Baltic Sea. However, Berlin abruptly halted a decade-long effort near Lubmin in the wake of the Russian offensive in Ukraine. Moscow has also stopped supplies to Europe via the Nord Stream 1 pipeline amid sanctions. The U.S. National Security Advisor threatens Russia that it will get a decisive response from Washington if it uses nuclear weapons against Ukraine. Jake Sullivan further warned that the ramifications of any potential use of nukes would be catastrophic for Russia. Sullivan, however, fell short of explaining the nature of a U.S. reaction in case Moscow resorts to nuclear weapons. The warning came just days after President Joe Biden accused his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, of making what he called overt nuclear threats against Europe. On Wednesday, Putin said his country is facing nuclear blackmail and that it will use all the means at its disposal to protect its territorial integrity. Putin's remarks have been interpreted by the West as a threat on the potential use of nuclear weapons in the ongoing Ukraine war. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian president has acknowledged for the first time that his country has received sophisticated air defense systems from the United States. Volodymyr Zelensky says Washington has provided Kiev with the National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile System that was long sought by his country. He thanked the U.S. for sending in the air defense batteries as well as other equipment, including HIMARS and other multiple rocket launching systems to counter Russian troops. Ukrainian troops have launched a counter-offensive in the eastern region since driving Russian forces out of the northeastern Kharkiv province earlier this month. Ukraine has also claimed its forces have been making gains in the south, but Russia accuses the West, the US in particular, of prolonging the war by delivering weapons to Ukraine. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Pro-choice advocates in Arizona, United States have said a ruling by a judge, which is likely to be appealed, would take Arizonans back to living under an archaic 150-year-old law. Stay with us for more on this story. The Associated Press has covered the story. Arizona can enforce a near-total ban on abortions that has been blocked for nearly 50 years. A judge ruled on Friday, 23rd of September, meaning that clinics statewide will have to stop providing the procedures to avoid criminal charges against doctors and other medical workers. The judge lifted a decades-old injunction that blocked enforcement of the law on the books since before Arizona became a state. The only exception to the ban is if the woman's life is in jeopardy. The ruling means the state's abortion clinics will have to shut down, and anyone seeking an abortion will have to go out of state. The ruling takes effect immediately, although an appeal is possible. Abortion providers have been on a roller coaster ride since last June, when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade, a decision guaranteeing women a constitutional right to an abortion, allowing states to regulate abortion as they wish. Planned Parenthood had urged the judge not to allow enforcement, and its president declared that the ruling takes Arizonans back to living under an archaic 150-year-old law. Mark Brnovich, the Republican Attorney General of Arizona, who had urged the judge to lift the injunction so the ban could be enforced, cheered the decision. "We applaud the court for upholding the will of the legislature and providing clarity and uniformity on this important issue," Mark Brnovich said. The ruling comes amid an election season in which Democrats have seized on abortion rights as a potent issue. Senator Mark Kelly, under a challenge from Republican Blake Masters, said it will have a devastating impact on the freedom Arizona women have had for decades to choose an abortion. Democrat Katie Hobbs, who is running for governor, called it the product of a decades-long attack on reproductive freedom by Republicans that can only be fended off by voters this November. Blake Masters and Kerry Lake, the Republican running against Katie Hobbs, both back abortion restrictions. The near-total abortion ban was enacted decades before Arizona secured statehood in 1912. Prosecutions were halted after the injunction was handed down after the Roe decision. Even so, the legislature reenacted the law several times, most recently in 1977. Under the law, anyone convicted of performing a surgical abortion or providing drugs for the medication abortion could face 2 to 5 years in prison. Bans on abortion at any point in pregnancy were in place in 12 Republican-led states. In Wisconsin, abortion clinics have stopped providing abortions amid litigation over whether an 1849 ban is in effect. Georgia bans abortions once fetal cardiac activity can be detected. Florida and Utah have bans on abortion that kick in after 15 and 18 weeks, respectively. The ruling also came a day before a new Arizona law banning abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy takes effect. The Reuters news agency has more on this story. An Arizona judge ruled on Friday, 23rd of September, that a 1901 ban on nearly all abortions in the state can be enforced after being blocked for about 50 years, a decision that drew immediate criticism from abortion rights activists and Democrats and is likely to be appealed. Pima County Superior Court Judge Kelly Johnson granted a request by the state's Republican Attorney General to lift a court injunction that had barred enforcement of Arizona's pre-statehood ban on abortion after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Roe v. Wade in 1973. Judge Kelly Johnson's ruling bans all abortions in Arizona except when the procedure is necessary to save the mother's life. Abortion rights advocacy group Planned Parenthood said the ruling has the practical and deplorable result of sending Arizonans back nearly 150 years. Democratic gubernatorial nominee Katie Hobbs said she was outraged and devastated by the judge's decision. The court finds that because the legal basis for the judgment entered in 1973 has now been overruled, it must vacate the judgment in its entirety, Judge Kelly Johnson said in her ruling. The Supreme Court in June overturned the right to abortion it had recognized in the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade ruling. We applaud the court for upholding the will of the legislature and providing clarity and uniformity on this important issue, Arizona Attorney General Mark Bernovich said in a tweet after the judge's ruling. Democrats have been eager to cast Republicans as extreme on the abortion issue since the U.S. Supreme Court last June overturned Roe v. Wade, and many states began enforcing abortion bans.
For thought. Salam and condolences on the passing away anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Here is a wise saying from him. A true believer does not taunt, damn, slander, and abuse people.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome again, dear listeners. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's program, we are going to talk about the principles of friendship. We are going to talk about how to achieve a successful friendship. What are the things that we need to consider while we are looking for a successful friendship? One of the main things that we need to consider is a bad companion. What am I trying to say? That a bad companion is not a friend. It is possible that an innocent fellow with good habits and good manners may meet a bad and an uncultured fellow and make him a friend, thereby polluting his personality and reputation due to this relationship. How many times an innocent youth with good reputation turns into someone with bad morals and reputation due to his relation with deviated friends? Whenever you have bad friends, they will lead you to doing bad deeds, definitely. That's so definite. So, considering not having a friend who is a bad companion, who has bad habits, is among the things that will make you achieve a successful relationship in your life. He becomes a criminal and abnormal person, hated and downgraded by others, or a wanderer rambling around in the streets and avenues. Why? Because he just befriended someone who is not a good guy. All we should do is stay away from a bad companion.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and you are listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We've been talking about principles of friendship, and we'll be talking about how to achieve a successful friendship. We say that by avoiding a bad companionship will make you achieve a successful friendship. The Holy Quran calls or says about this particular trait of us choosing bad companions. It says in the chapter 43, verse number 67, it says, "Friends on that day will be foes one to another, except those who keep their duty." All that the verse is trying to portray is the sense of regrets which befall man after dwelling into deviation and crime due to his association with bad friends. Whenever you are associating with yourself with a bad friend, you definitely are building you are definitely destroying your life. You are definitely going to lead yourself into a bad life. Why? Because it's going to befall you. It's going to make you fall down. It's going to make you dwell into things that are not good, into crime, into, you know, bad habits, and so on and so forth. Why? Because you chose a bad companion. So the Quran says that whenever you choose a bad companion, remember, in the day of judgment, it will be counted in you. Don't forget that. Therefore, a bad companion is not a friend, because your friend is he who accompanies you and attracts good towards you. He who creates bad things towards you, turning you towards crime and deviation, corrupting your path and future. So this particular person cannot be considered as a friend, thus should be considered as someone who is leading you to the wrong path, someone who is leading you to the bad path, and is the person you should stay away if you want to have a successful relationship, a successful friendship in your life between you and your friend, partner. Thank you so much for listening in. Till next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.
the light.
Age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps the trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC. They're back as India has revealed or released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The 8 radio-coloured African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths, and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledgling Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40. World Cleanup Day unites millions of volunteers, governments, and organizations to tackle the global waste problem and build a sustainable world. People in several countries joined the efforts again for a waste-free world. Volunteers were seen in mangrove forests in the suburb of Bangkok. They collected more than 1.5 tons of rubbish in just a few hours. Trash picking events were also held in the Philippines and Vietnam. In Hanoi, hundreds, mostly students, armed with metal tongs and sacks, walked along major roads. They said their aim is to raise awareness about protecting the environment. In Manila, people cleaned up the city's beaches that are major tourist attractions. The annual cleanup day has been running for over a decade. From divers collecting marine debris to children picking up trash on beaches have just one goal: make our planet a cleaner place.
Chinese astronauts are celebrating their first ever mid-autumn festival in outer space while sharing their otherworldly experience with people on Earth. The crew had a close-up view of the moon from China's Tiangong space station and their third month in space. On the occasion, the ground crew organized a series of celebrations, including a family reunion for the astronauts. The ground crew also prepared elaborate food packages that had been prepared before the launch of the spacecraft. Typically, the traditional festival is kicked off by the first viewing of the full moon on the 15th day of the 8th month of the lunar calendar. Despite being able to see the moon rise and set 16 times a day, the astronauts say the moon is special on this occasion. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals. Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to old people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process. Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre-Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
Illegal hunting and hybridization with American crocodiles have for decades threatened their populations, with some species being on the verge of extinction. But there are some people who put their lives at risk to save the natural heritage. A Cuban researcher has released a baby crocodile that was confiscated from illegal hunters back into the wild. It was a happy moment for Etienne Perez, who went waist-deep in the dark water of Zapata Swamp to free Cuban crocs, the smallest known range of any living crocodile species. Cuban scientists were racing for quite some time to save the rarest crocodile. The government has protected virtually all of the vast swamp, widely considered to be the best preserved in the Caribbean. But the scientists say more efforts are needed to save the nature.
Releasing crocodile seized from poachers is really impressive because we return the animal to a free life in the wild. In the case of the animals in the hatchery, we are trying to increase the historical range of the Cuban crocodile and, of course, increase the number of these individuals in the wild.
Cuban scientists estimate that around 4,000 crocodiles continue to live in the wild. But because the area they prefer within the wetland is relatively small, a climate-related disaster, increasingly common now globally, could wipe out the brunt of the population. They say illegal hunting for decades is also threatening crocodile populations.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The pillars of U.S. supremacy are shaking as emerging economies are developing in a rapid pace. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media to know their idea about this issue. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The website of Middle East Eye wrote, "The world order is fading away, and there is still no clear idea about the next one. It took just 30 years. The Cold War ended, but a warm peace lasted barely a decade. The pillars of the U.S.-led rules-based world order, neoliberalism, free market economy, unregulated finance, and globalization are now all in question. At the dawn of the 21st century, history and nature began to assertively reclaim their prerogatives from an overconfident and hubristic humanity. The events of 9/11 and the long American wars in Iraq and Afghanistan tarnished the unipolar leadership of the U.S. regime and its military superiority. Pax Americana has been in retreat ever since. The 2008 global financial crisis raised doubts about a greedy, speculative, over-financialized, and under-regulated economy. The fallout has been harsh austerity measures, spreading massive inequality. The latest data from the US and UK are chilling. Long-lasting monetarist economic theories have been cast aside, while printing money has become the new normal in the US and EU. Blind trust in the market's balancing role, the so-called invisible hand, has been shaken. Financial bailouts and the COVID-19 pandemic have shown that a visible hand, that of the state, is necessary. Neoliberal politicians, economists, and pundits have suddenly forgotten what they have been preaching for decades. China has slowly awoken and reclaimed the role it had for the overwhelming part of the last two millennia as the world's leading economic power. And it has gone even further, becoming an impressive technological power, with examples including 5G, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing. and an expanding military power. This has sent alarm bells ringing in Washington. The U.S. was shocked by China's rise and remains unwilling to share its long-established global hegemony. Reading the tea leaves correctly is thus crucial, but the Western media has already gotten it wrong in coverage of the recent Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit, obsessively searching for a split between China and Russia, when the real news was the long queue of countries willing to join the organization. Iran and Belarus have been admitted, and others could soon be added, including Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and the UAE. Incidentally, they are all allies and partners of the US. While it is true that Moscow and Beijing hold different views on many issues, the die is cast. They are on the same boat, with even the economists recognizing this fact. A key event is set to take place in China next month, when Xi Jinping is expected to be reappointed as the country's top leader for an unprecedented third mandate that could pave the way for his nomination for life. And in November, the U.S. midterm elections will determine whether the Biden administration can carry on its ambitious agenda, both inside and outside the country. A week later, the G20 summit in Indonesia will show how relations are evolving among the Global South and Global North blocs. What is clear now is that globalization is crumbling. As Zoltan Pozsar of Credit Suisse masterfully summarized, globalization was fueled by cheap gas from Russia to Europe and cheap products from China to the US, which sustained the American consumerist dream. The system also relied on American financial dominance, built upon the US dollar as the global reserve currency. And for decades, it was gifted with low inflation and zero interest rates. This situation is no more. U.S. financial hegemony is less tolerated, as the dollar has been excessively weaponized against anyone who does not align with Washington's positions. The main keywords now are decoupling and reshoring in the face of increasingly disrupted global supply chains. Cut off from Russia's cheap energy, Europe is adopting far more expensive alternatives. The US and China are increasingly decoupling from each other without even asking what impacts could follow from the cut off of supply chains and financial flows.
Midstream.
Lebanon has been negotiating to settle maritime border registration with the Zionist occupation. This negotiation, which has known difficulties and included new and illogical demands from the Israeli entity's side, is apparently nearing its end, with a very good possibility that no agreement will be reached in the coming weeks. All the while, Hezbollah continues to up the ante against the Israeli occupation,